views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha. Welcome to Makai Watch, a program about the aina, those things that feed us. We provide information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai, Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea and the sea is connected to you and me. The Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, now in its fourth printing. Please call our office at 826-1985 to receive your 2016 edition today. We're getting ready to lay out, folks, for next year's calendar, so comments, questions, ideas are all welcome. Call the office, 826-1985, to let us know what you'd like to see in the calendar, to keep, to throw away, to add. My name is Maka'ala. I'd like to thank KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us today. Anything that goes wrong is her fault, not mine. Please remember this program and all of the others on the station are funded by you, our listeners here on Kauai, in Hawaii, or across the ocean on a land far, far away. Please show your support and join our membership today. The membership drive is coming up, folks. Now's the time. You want to support programs like this and all the other community-developed programming that we have at this little shack in the jungle. Now's the time to make your pledges. Now's the time to help support us. This kind of effort and this kind of facility and equipment don't come cheap. So please send your support and your love and aloha to us when at all possible. Go to the website for more information. We're going to be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for today. And actually today we're going to do two separate things. To begin with, the number to call is 826-7771. And to start today, we have a special surprise guest. But first, I'm going to tell you about a very important project on our island, in fact, on the north shore of our island, to be specific. For those of you who listen from other locations, I really try hard to make this information useful and appropriate to you, even if you don't live on Kauai. But this is our local community radio station, and so sometimes it's place-specific. Our April broadcast of the Makai Watch program was an interview with Elton Ushio, our Kauai Civil Defense, and Patrick Gallagher from the American Red Cross. As some of you know, the communities of our North Shore here on Kauai are sometimes isolated by weather incidents such as heavy rain, flooding, tsunami, and landslides, and the occasional hurricane blows through. The communities of Hanalei, Wainiha, and Haena are all accessed via one-lane bridges and narrow two-lane roads. We love our bridges and we love our roads, but in times of severe weather or impending major storms or tsunami, we will need to know where we can go to be safe. So, to be prepared, we made a plan. It's called the Hanalei to Haena Disaster Resilience Plan. This plan provides a good list of what you should know, what you should have, where you should go in the case of an emergency. It doesn't really matter the kind of emergency, although I will add here that because most of these coastal communities are low-lying, one of the issues is where to go and evacuation. So it's glitchy. We are a volcanic rock in the middle of the deep blue sea. And a lot of our land, if you go very far inland, is vertical. So it's very important to think about this ahead of time. But again, this information is good no matter which island you're on, no matter even if you're on the continent, I would suspect. So this plan is only as good as the information in it is up to date. And it's time to update it. For us in Hawaii, June 1 marks the beginning of hurricane season. And while that is certainly not the only threat we face in our community, it's a good time to remember to update our plan, and we're doing just that. The planning hui, or group that developed the plan, will convene on May 26 to learn new information, to receive the new flood and inundation maps, and yes, folks, they are new. NOAA and other agencies teamed up and looked at all of the historical data and updated their models, their predictions for where the water would actually go. And some of the flood maps, in fact, are quite different. For one thing, they traced the water run-up up our streams and rivers. So for those of you living fairly high up, but maybe on the side of a river or a stream, you're going to see in the new maps that the water actually gets much higher up inland than you knew. The new phone books will have this information in the front of the phone book. They should be out, and they're printed already. They should be out pretty soon. So check it out. And if it's not clear to you, we'll make sure you have contact information to get updated information on those flood maps. It's important to know how that water travels and how it might impact you or you and your travels as you're driving around the North Shore, what would happen if. So the planning Hui'i group that developed a plan is going to reconvene on May 26th to learn new information, receive the new flood and inundation maps, and make any changes to the plan that's needed. This group includes residents, local organizations, businesses, different kinds of interests in our community, including churches, emergency responders, and government folks. We know one thing for sure. If every single person does what they're supposed to do, it will take us 6 hours to evacuate our area. For events such as hurricanes and tsunami coming from across the ocean, this is probably enough time. For a tsunami that are generated from earthquakes on Hawaii Island, a big island, all bets are off, and it's run for the hills. Literally. The wave would hit Kauai in 20 minutes. For those of you listening that may be on Kauai now on a regular visit or enjoying your first vacation on the island, please check in your accommodation for instructions or check the front of our phone book for routes and safe ground. By the way, if you look in your unit, if you're here vacationing and you're staying in someone's home and you can't find the information in that unit, please let the people with whom you booked know that it's not there. It's important that it be there. For our residents who are listening, especially those who live in Hanalei, Wainiha, or Haena, you're invited and encouraged to check out the plan on our website, hanaleiwatershedhui.org, and check it out. Provide comments or questions for the planning Hui. They're going to meet on the 26th, so if you see something in the plan that doesn't, it's confusing, not clear, you need to know more, or you have the stories of old, you have the experience that may not be reflected in the plan, please let us know. And that's exactly the kind of update we're going to have. If you're able to join us on May 26th, it's going to be at 2 o'clock. If you're able to join us, please do. We use this really cool tool. It's called an e-beam, B-E-A-M, as in a light beam, because it's sort of what it is. It's a device, it's hardware that's connected to our computer, and our computer has been loaded with the GIS informational mapping. And it's a tool that you hold in your hand, and you are able to write or draw or make all kinds of different shapes and things on top of a GIS map that we project on the wall. And whatever you write or draw is kept. It becomes part of that layer. So we're literally creating real time our own GIS maps and information, databases too, because we can add things like, used to be a store there, but it's not there anymore, or Uncle Joe moved, and so we can't use that, you know, things like that. This tool allows us to make our plan very specific to us, to where we are, and who we are, what we know, and what we don't know. There was a storm, I'm thinking it was almost 3 years ago now, in March, and it was just a rainstorm. It wasn't a hurricane. It wasn't a tsunami. It was a pretty good storm. And it just hit us in such a way that it caused a whole lot of slides. In fact, 5 distinct areas were isolated that couldn't get from one point to the other. And this was kind of new, at least in recent era. So folks found themselves unable to get out of places that they, before that, had always been able to get to. We know that the road floods by Hanalei Bridge. We know that we're often isolated there. But at this point, we were isolated in different spots, in Haena, in Wainiha, in Lumahai, and up the hill as well. We were isolated in Princeville. They couldn't get to Kilauea. Kalihiwai slid. That experience led us to using this e-beam, because what we could do is have the people that lived through that, that were trying to get from A to B, use the tool and say, well, this is where I was, and this is what happened. And then we had the fire department and the police department there with us in the meeting, and they said, okay, and this is how long it took for us to close that. We have the Department of Transportation meets with us as well, and they tell us how long it's going to take. Do we have the heavy equipment needed to clear that kind of slide on our side of the bridge? So this tool, although it's a little techie, and it was expensive, I will tell you, it really enables us to use our community knowledge, our local mana'o, what we know and have experienced, and make it part of a map and a plan that we can share electronically. So it's not just something you draw on that you have to display like a banner. You really can, it transfers right away into a GIS format. So we're able to share it. We're able to adjust it, change it, amend it. It's a very, very cool thing. And so if you're able to join us on the 26th, please do that. That's going to be an important opportunity for us to gather and make the changes in our plan. It's been 2 years now, and we know stuff has changed. So the plan's only as good and useful as we make it. So check it out. Let us know what it needs. And if you'd like to participate with the planning hui, you can email me, Makaala, M-A-K-A-A-L-A, at hawaiian.net, and I'll save a spot for you to come and join that planning group. It's very cool, and it's okay if you're not necessarily from the North Shore. We know other communities. I'm very excited about a project going on now in Hanapepe. They're using a different kind of program to look at their community and see what their needs are for disaster preparedness. Very different than the one we used on the North Shore, but very good and very effective and quite extensive. It's going to take them well over a year to put this together, but it'll be a great plan when they're finished with it. And I'm hopeful that I'll be able to actually join a couple of their sessions, because I think it'd be kind of interesting to see how other communities approach this. We all want to do it our own way, and that's fine. And we all need to have it work for us in our place. So if you have any questions about that, you can give me a call at 826-7771. Now, the next thing is, get ready, halele'a. If I had I have a quiz question today, and that is, where is halele'a? I'm assuming Laura can answer, but we'll see, because I didn't give her the answer yet again. It's my favorite thing to do. I quiz you and I quiz her at the same time. She's flashing me looks, so I guess I better write it down. Okay, so get ready, halele'a, June 4th from 4 p.m. And I had set it up for 8 p.m., but we're going to do a movie. We're going to do a family movie. I don't know what it is yet, but I will promote it and get it out there, because I haven't bought it yet. But we're going to do a family-friendly movie at night. So if I only did this till 8, you'd only see a half an hour of the movie. So clearly we're going to adjust the time a little bit. It'll probably go to about 9. And it's going to be on the grounds of Hale Halawai Ohana Ohanale, which is the Hanalei Community Center. For those of you who visit regularly and not sure where that is, it's the location of the Saturday Farmers Market in Hanalei. And we're going to hold our biennial preparedness event, meaning we have it every 2 years, or at least it's been 2 years since we did it. We'll have our emergency responders, our ham radio folks, our civil defense folks, our Red Cross and CERT folks, and Truckin' Delicious, our local Hanalei food truck that is a local favorite for us on the North Shore, Truckin' Delicious. I don't know who thought of the name, but I like it. And we're going to have some music. We have some local youth bands that we had last time. They've grown up. They've gotten kind of famous. They're all graduating from high school. So the younger edition is who we're hoping to get, the next up-and-coming group. And of course, the movie. We'll have the new flood maps blown up big so you can see exactly where you live and what you need to know. We encourage you to come and meet the folks that are responsible for our safety, to learn about the plan, to eat a little food, to enjoy the music, watch the movie. We promise it won't be a scary one this time. Last time we ran The Impossible, and us adults liked the movie a whole lot, but the kids were kind of freaked out, so we had a little repair work to do around that. We're not going to do that again. We're going to do a family-friendly flick, I promise. Not too scary anyway. It'll be cool for the kids. So we're going to have the fire department smoky trailer. Now, if you haven't done the smoky trailer, I know that's not what it's called, but it's what I call it, the smoky trailer. If you haven't done it, it's the house on a trailer that fills with smoke as if it was your house. It has a setup inside, a kitchen and a bedroom and so forth. And you go inside and then they light a fire, kind of, sort of. But the experience is the same. And it's a wonderful opportunity to see what it really looks like without being in trouble, without being in danger. And adults, they'll let adults go in it too. It's a very, very cool tool and important for us all to try that out. If you haven't checked that out, it's way cool or hot and very educational too. So for more information on this, I want you to call the office at 826-1985, or you can email me, makaala, M-A-K-A-A-L-A, at hawaiian.net. It's not Hawaiiantel, folks. That's hawaiian.net. Yep, we have one of those. We hope to make it interesting, important, and fun. So put it in your calendar now, please. June 4th at Halehalawai at 4 p.m. Get ready, halelea. Before we take a break, I want to also remind folks that we are running the after-school and summer program through the Hanalei Watershed Hui. It's the Ahupua'a Explorations Program 2016, and we're getting prepared now for our summer program, which is June 2nd through July 28th. It's Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's going to be all day, 9 to 3. But this is way cool. This is where we bring folks who know how to do stuff or who know stuff in. So it's not listening to me all day. In the summer session, we're actually going to do a full-on ocean safety course. We're going to do some surf lessons, and we're going to paddle the kids up the Hanalei in kayaks. So it's a lot of hands-on out in the field, not in the classroom. But we can also use our mobile lab so we can do some water quality work. We can check out stuff underneath the microscope. And we can learn about the flora and fauna, the critters and things that fly and float in Hanalei and hopefully float. So this is for 4th, 5th, and 6th grade students. The purpose of it is to teach our children stewardship and the values of taking care of the aina. We're talking about the streams and the estuaries, the wetlands, the wildlife, and the human communities. We're talking a lot about the culture, some of the hale buildings, some of the hut buildings, some of the cordage, some of the plants. Weather and climate is a theme, and local agriculture. So I really hope that folks will take advantage of this. It is only 2 days a week, but it's all day. So if you want to get that 4th, 5th, or 6th grader out of your hair for a couple days a week from June 2nd to July 28th, I'll take them. And it's free. Free, free, free. There's no charge. We got a grant from NOAA to run this program, and it's funding the local people to come and work it, and it's funding the purchase of supplies, etc. So please join us. You can call the office too at 826-1985, or you can email me, makaala at hawaiian.net. Okay, so what I think we'll do is take a little break, and we'll be back with a special surprise guest. Stranger, it seems so
shabab, shabab, Monday. It seems like a mighty long time.
Holy moly, it's Hob Osterlund. That's our surprise. Are you ready? Welcome, friend. How's it?
How's it?
So, you remember Hob once before on this show. We did a an albatross show, and then we did a pigeon show. Well, this is kind of the combination of the two, I think. Hob, in all that time, was writing a book. Who knew? And it turns out it's really good. It turns out it's getting really good reviews. And I'm blasting it on Facebook. So if you want to see some of the pictures, you know, check us out on Facebook, either Hob Osterlund or me. But this is a wonderful chance to talk about Holy Moly. And I think I'm going to start with spelling moly, because M-O-L-I is the Hawaiian word for an albatross. Although we've all said, holy moly, I don't think we've spelled it this way. Mm-hmm. So, Hob, you've done something some of us have on our bucket list. At least one of us has on our bucket list. You wrote a book. It's fantastic. I read it in one sitting, which is something I haven't done in over 40 years. I'm serious. I have not sat down and read a book all the way from stop to end in one sitting in 40 years. And I set the time aside, and then, of course, it rained, which made it even easier to do, right? Told everybody to just leave me alone, and I read it. It's fabulous. Holy moly. So I kind of gave the first question away of what's a moly, but tell me about a moly from your perspective.
Oh, albatross are such fascinating animals. You know, we forget on Kauai that no one else has them. Anywhere in the world, no inhabited place has moly but us. And so not only are they extraordinary in almost every way we can imagine, but they're so special to being on Kauai, just wild on Kauai. They've chosen to nest here. They've not chosen ever to nest anywhere with a human population.
It's a fascinating story.
Tell
that story, just a little bit of the how come.
Well, albatross probably started nesting here a couple of million years ago. You know, they're 20-something million years on our planet. And Kauai came bubbling out of the ocean about 5 million years ago. And so they found it at some point when it was cool enough and big enough to nest on, and probably started nesting here a couple of million years ago. But then when people arrived, maybe 1,500 years ago or so, they disappeared. They were really easy food, easy to catch. They don't see us as enemies, so they don't fly away or run away. Their eggs were big and full of protein. So they probably got the word, the science word for the day is extirpated, which doesn't mean, it doesn't, what it doesn't mean is extinct. What it does mean is that they're gone from this island for now. So that's probably what happened. After people had been here for a while, they probably were not able to nest here anymore. Because people, we brought predators with them, us too. Not only did they were the Moli food, but we also brought pigs, dogs, cats, rats. All of them are predators of the albatross. So, but they were still seen at sea. All the fishermen would see them. Anybody who was out voyaging in the ocean would see albatross because they're safe from the predators out there. They have no enemies at sea. Nothing that predates upon them. So they basically weren't nesting here for some time. And their main nesting ground for 99.9% of them is at Midway, Pihimanu, up about 1,500 miles northwest of here.
And there's a bunch of them there.
Oh, boy, are there. There's a couple of million of them, and that's just the nesters. And then on top of that, there are all the teenagers who are looking for the singles bar of their dreams. So it's quite a rockin' place. I think there's something like, if you go there, it's something like 36,000 birds per person or something like that.
And these are not little bitty birds, folks.
No. These are big bug eyes.
Yeah, we're talking about a 6.5-foot wingspan. So they're as long as Kobe Bryant is tall.
Wonder if he knows that.
We got to let him know, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, put that on your list, huh?
Yeah.
Next time you're someplace.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, you let him know. So So back in the mid-70s or so, albatross started attempting to nest here again in Kilauea, over on the west side or in the Mana Plain over PMRF grounds. But, you know, there were so many hunting dogs running loose in those days, and so, you know, they got killed because they nest on the ground. They can't nest in a tree. And once they lay an egg or have a chick, they're so loyal, they will never leave it. So people have set fires to fields to try to get rid of albatross, and they won't leave their babies or leave their eggs. That's how loyal and faithful they are. So a dog comes charging in an albatross. It won't leave its baby, and besides, it doesn't even know what an enemy is, so it's not going to recognize a predator as a problem. So then, but in 1978, a youth conservation corps put up a small fence in the Kilauea area to protect a few nesting albatross. And in 1979, the very first chick in maybe more than 1,000 years fledged from the bluff of Kauai. And that was the official beginning of a new colony of albatross. It could be, maybe it was a resurrection of an ancient one, but albatross almost never in all the species of the world ever start a new colony. They're so loyal to where they hatched.
And this is a specific place that they would need because it's rocky, it's on the cliff, it faces the ocean, it's on the ocean. So we're not talking about up in the valleys far away. They right. need to be where they can catch the wind and where they can mm-hmm. get to the sea
right.
directly.
Right, they need coastal nesting spot. So it's a really interesting question to ask ourselves, why did that first female, the pioneers in albatross are females. So why did that first female bypass her family at Midway? We know, by the way, that she was from Midway because she was banded there. And a very, very small percentage of the birds at Midway are banded. So
somebody had ticked her off on Midway and she went a-looking.
Who knows? But she bypassed her family. She'd been sailing all over the whole North Pacific from Japan to British Columbia up into the Bering Straits, all kinds of places for 4 years. And then all of a sudden she felt that urge to find love. But she passed by Midway, Pihimanu. She passed by her family, tens of thousands of potential mates, flew 1,500 miles away from her food source and away from her family, and found Kauai. That by itself is amazing enough. But on top of that, the more amazing thing is that she chose to stay. And she either brought home or found a mate. So here she is. I call her Makani for the wind. Here she is, finding a mate, laying an egg, getting ready to raise a baby, and someone puts up a fence to protect her. So she does indeed raise a baby, and then that chick fledges. So that was in June of 1979. So off that chick went was the beginning of the population of albatross on Kauai. So last year we fledged about 250 from Kauai. This year it'll be a little bit less just because the years vary based on weather conditions and El Nino and food sources and all sorts of things.
But the norm is for them to go back to where they were fledged.
Yes.
to find the mate there.
Exactly.
and to lay an egg there. So so something happened anyway.
Something
whatever
happened.
That was.
That's right.
To make her not return to Midway and to come here instead. And it may, in fact, have been something, I mean, in my fantasy world and my crazy head, it might be something like an old memory, you know, of a DNA memory of a place.
You can speculate about it. You know, that's not the kind of thing we can prove by science.
No.
It's really interesting to explore it because it could be something ancient in her DNA. It could be a wind that blew her that direction until she discovered something she liked, or who knows? Some people think it has to do with more of a much larger mythology about her basically knowing that there's something, or sensing that there's some danger coming to Midway, because Midway is going to go underwater with global sea rise. And so she's coming to a place where there's elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have on Kauai three basic features that make it possible for them to be here like nowhere else. One, we have elevated bluffs. It's basically the 11 miles of coastline between Anahola and Princeville. Two, we have almost an absence of mongoose. All the other islands, as you know, are just completely covered with mongoose, and the ground nesting birds fare very poorly with all the mongoose. We may have a few here. We don't know. We haven't been able to establish whether there's any population hidden away from us somewhere, but haven't caught one in a trap for years now. So elevated bluffs, a near absence of mongoose, and number three, you, people who care.
Mm-hmm.
If you have people who care about them, that's the winning ticket for them, because then they can be protected from predators. We can keep them safe from the animals that we brought here to their homeland. We brought danger to them. So we mitigate that danger by building a fence that keeps out pigs and dogs, making sure that feral cats can't get them. Rats aren't such a big enemy of theirs because the birds are pretty big, but they can be a problem. So
I've got this cartoon playing in my head right now of her going back over out foraging, flying those thousands of miles that they fly, and then on her way back to Kauai, going over Midway and shouting down, "Hey, you guys,
come this way!" Oh yeah,
it's not where you stay is probably not the best place right now. You know,
plus getting one cool single ball.
Yeah.
Oh, what about this new place of plenty of dancing? Oh, hot guys.
I mean, it's gotta be some communication between.
Oh, you know,
I found a safe place.
Yeah,
you
know? Come this way.
Yeah,
sort of like Superman's father. Yeah, putting him on the rocket to send him away from Krypton.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, fascinating. So they're compelling. That's for sure. We know that, and I hope folks that are listening will, you know, look them up. You know, see a picture, see the scale, see the size, and because this is not your little, you know, caged bird, and this is not a mina.
No.
This is a big bird. This is a formidable thing. I mean, some of the chicks, you told me how much they weigh.
They weigh more than their parents.
Yeah.
Well, and I do want to make the point that you just made too, for people who don't know, because we're used to seeing birds that can suddenly fly away if they see something that scares them. Albatross can't do that. Even if they did recognize a predator, they need a runway. They have to stand up. Remember, 6.5-foot wingspan. They've got to run a bunch of feet or catch wind. But whatever they do, then they have to try to rise up. They won't leave their chicks and babies, like I said. But let's say they're not with a chick or a baby and they see a dog coming. The dog is going to move way faster than they can, because they're just, unless they have lots of lead time, they wouldn't be able to get away.
I know Hob doesn't particularly like this word, but when I was growing up, I grew up in the Marianas, and we called them goonie birds. And we called them goonie birds for two reasons. And one was the way they took off, because da-dong, 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 da-dong. You know, this is not, you know, a pitter-pat of little, you know, birdie toes, you know, running through the leaves. This is a galumping bird who is, you know, stretching these huge wings. But the other reason we called them goonie birds was the way they landed. And mm-hmm. and Hob is trying her desperate self to teach me to stop thinking of it this way. She's teaching me that, of course, they land like that. They've been flying for like months, but they land on their noses, folks. They land and then it's head over tea kettle a lot of times.
I gotta take you someplace. You're putting. You cannot learn, huh?
It's not the most graceful. I'm sure they land better when it's a cliff edge and stuff, but I saw them trying to land on runways. They saw the planes taken off from the runways, so they used the runways. You talk about them wanting a runway. They know how to use a runway. And that's one reason we scare them away is because they were, you know, where the planes needed to be. But
I don't think I've seen one bird land like you
described. Head over tea kettle?
I mean in the last 3 or 4 years. And the birds that I think do that are the birds that have actually just come back to land for the first time.
It makes sense.
After they fledge, they've been out at sea for 3 or 4 years. So they come down to land, never having landed on terra firma in all that time. And so maybe they land with the wind instead of against it, like every bird should. So I actually did once see a bird do a somersault, that it landed, and it was almost like it was planned. It landed, it bounced off the feet, did a flip, and landed on its back. I have seen that, but most of the birds know exactly what to do. They land into the wind, they settle, they alight very lightly.
Go into a stall. Then just glide down and land very. I have seen them do that.
Exactly.
Not the birds of my youth, but I have seen them.
That's all right. You can call them goony birds if you like. Just love them. That's all I care about.
And just the name matters not. Okay, so then you know all this, and you've been concerning yourselves with their welfare and well-being, and certainly with the education about them for several years now, many years now. Why the book?
Gosh, I guess the story begins in the year 2000. I happened to have caught an Oprah program where she said, if you were on your deathbed, is there anything you would regret?
Ooh.
And three things came up to me, bang. No, I did not bid them. They just came up, and like they may have just now for you, just came up from my subconscious. And the first one was, you didn't move back to Kauai. I had lived on Kauai in the 70s and early 80s. I was here for Eva, and then I went to Honolulu to go to graduate school, and that's where I found work. And so I was there for a long time, always yearning to return. So there I was in Honolulu when I had that moment. And so I then said to myself, okay, that's it. I'm going back to Kauai. The second thing was, you never visited Bhutan, the kingdom of Bhutan, which I wanted to do so much for a long time. And the third one was, you never wrote something that described your soul's experience. So I didn't know where that came from. I have some talent for writing. It came to me genetically. My parents and grandparents and my missionary ancestors wrote in journals. So, but I mostly was publishing clinical things. I'm an advanced practice nurse. I did a clinical nurse specialist at Queens for a lot of years. And so mostly I wrote clinical things and stories. And I also wrote comedy for the character I did called Ivy Push.
Mm-hmm.
But I never
DVD,
wrote...
DVD, folks, by the way, is available at Amazon. I just found one.
Uh-huh, it's true.
It's a freaky little DVD. You really have to check it out.
She's English, Irish, Scottish, Hawaiian, Chinese, Portuguese, and she's a nurse. The whole show's in Pidgin. And filmed at the Manoa Valley Theater in Honolulu.
It's hysterical.
Very fun. So that was always simmering in me, that I wanted to write something that really described something profound for me. And the moli have always been profound for me. But when I came back to Kauai, I quite serendipitously got an opportunity to start monitoring some birds on private land here. And that was a major gift to me. So then I began observing them and began learning from them and who they were. And I knew that they were amokua to me, family. Manifested in the form of an animal, and that it was my responsibility to serve them. And I can tell you the moment it happened, but I knew it was my responsibility to serve them. So this is that book.
Who is this book for?
Good question. It's really, in terms of, I gave you two levels of answers for that. For readers that you see in the world, it's really for anyone. It's for people interested in birds, people interested in Kauai, people interested in healing. It's also I also tell my own story of my mother's death as a child and what ridiculous, impossible promise I made to her. Excuse me. And how the albatross helped to heal me of that. So it's for anybody who's interested in freedom for themselves. It's for people who enjoy good writing. I'm the kind of writer that could spend 8 hours a day for 6 days and be happy if I have 4 pages at the end of that time. So I'm very careful about communicating respect to the reader. That I promise you I'm not going to waste your time.
Hence, you can read it in one sitting, folks.
Yeah.
It has a flow. I knew some of the story before I read the book, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter what you know about the albatross. Doesn't matter if you know Hop. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And that, to me, is a gauge of a good book, because it doesn't matter what you do or do not know before you start reading it, that it's still... it has something for everyone. Mm-hmm. I can't think of... The reason I asked you the question of who'd you write it for is I'm pretty careful when I recommend things to people. After I read it, I thought, okay, now who would I not recommend this to? And I'm stumped. I can't think of anybody, because I think it's written in such a way and at such a level that most everyone can read it and appreciate it and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it offends. Yeah. And I don't think it's, that's kind of a balance. I don't read a lot of fiction for that purpose. Well, one reason is I've got a stack 6 feet high next to my bed of stuff I'm supposed to read.
Right.
So, but it's when you set out to write something, I think you write for yourself to start with. Most of the time, unless it's just, general fiction. But a book like this, is you tend to write it for yourself, but you're telling a story about yourself to someone else. So, in fact, you're writing it for different interests and from different angles.
Right.
And it you could read this book and have it not really be about the birds. You'd still get a whole nother... Mm-hmm. You could read this book and not give a rip about the birds.
Yeah.
At the end, you'll
give a rip
for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. But it might not be. The cover of the book is a picture that you took of two albatross who are clearly close friends, if not mates.
They're mates,
not
huh?
them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start the book that it's probably about a bird.
Mm-hmm.
But many of the good stories in this world, it seems to me, are. It doesn't really matter what who the key player is.
So. Well, one of the things I learned in the process of doing this is that you don't sit down to write what you think. You sit down to find out what you think. And so so the more I wrote it, the more, because always the first couple of drafts, 3 or 4 or 5 drafts are crap. I mean, they're just not good. And so you have to keep on fine tuning. It's like people describe with a sculpture. You sculpt away the pieces that don't belong.
That's right.
And so... You keep on doing it, and so you're sure there's not redundancy. You're sure there's not insincerity. You're sure you're not writing something just to be coy or shocking. And I want to say something too about two other things about the reader. One is that it's not a children's book. It's not a young adult's book, but it's completely appropriate.
Yes.
One of the reviews on Amazon is written by a 12-year-old girl. I'm talking about what it meant to her.
Oh, that's very cool.
Which is very cool, and I love connecting with kids that are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and that age, who are thinking of who they are in the world and who they connect to. And so,
and they're not afraid to tell.
And they're not, yeah, exactly.
Before
yeah.
they've been affected by the rest of us.
Exactly, before they get domesticated.
Yeah.
So, and the other answer to your question about who I was writing it for, I was asked that question by an agent, actually. Who did you write it for? Because most people say, I'm writing it to be a bestseller. I want to be, I want to make $1 million. And that's not a good place to start, because your connection to your audience is insincere.
Yeah.
And so.
And the odds are not exactly in your favor.
Not exactly. No. Yeah, folks. Yeah, if you want to make a ton of money writing a book
is not necessarily the easy route.
Exactly. So I decided that I was actually writing it for my 10-year-old self, that was my main reader, because it was my 10-year-old self that lost her mother. to breast cancer, and it was my 10-year-old self who felt guilty and responsible for that. Because at 10, that's what you do. You don't have any other structure to hang it from. So I thought that I had done something really horrible, and that's why my mom was gone. And how could it be possible that the star of your life just is one day gone?
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote it for her because I wanted her to know that she's completely pure and clean and unguilty, not guilty.
not guilty of anything
like that. Yeah.
It's an experience of several approaches, of several levels. If you just want to know about the bird, it's there. But it's a story. It isn't just a book about birds. It's a true mm-hmm. story and uh-huh. the storytelling, which is why I wanted you to come in and talk about it, because we've talked about the birds before.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of a different, for me anyway, this is kind of a different thing. I like a good mm-hmm. storyteller. Mm-hmm. And the tradition of this place and almost all indigenous places that I've ever been around or within is the oral histories and the oral mm-hmm. traditions and the storytelling. And our music is certainly storytelling,
right.
and
mm-hmm.
and what I was talking about earlier with the preparedness plan and so forth, that a lot of the components of that have been storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can show you the technology and stuff that's going on in the world, but there's nothing better than somebody who can tell the story. And the same thing is true for this. I mean, you could certainly do a fact sheet on mm-hmm. the albatross and
sure.
you know, where they're from and where they go and what they eat and what they do and what they know.
Mm-hmm.
But to tell a story that mm-hmm. describes their lives and so forth.
Right.
Did you choose something that you might want to read from today?
I did. And I wanted to add to what you just said, too,
sure.
is that the part of my inspiration for moving to Kauai, or returning to my own roots, my own family roots, was that I had a dream one night living in Oregon of an ancestor of mine, my grandmother's cousin, whose name Martha Warren Beckwith, who's the author of Hawaiian Mythology and the Kumulipu. And I had only met her maybe 5 or 6 times in my life, and she died when I was 10, too, and
it was quite a year for you.
It was quite a year for me, yeah. But then she appeared in a dream, and all she did was hand me a copy of her book. I don't believe she said anything. She just handed me a copy of her book. And over months after that, I felt that I was being pulled to come to return to where she found such compelling stories, to come back to those stories and come back to the roots of her vision, interpretation. And so nobody understood why I had to leave Oregon and why I was going to Hawaii. And I had only a few $100 in my pocket and didn't know anybody here. I didn't have family left here anymore. But there was something, a powerful undercurrent was pulling me here.
Clearly.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Clearly. When compelled, compelled.
When compelled, compelled.
And
yes.
Makani was compelled to find something new as well. She'd never been here.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we all continually fledge. We all continually fledge and explore a new region. As soon as we fledge, it seems scary and we resist it, but it's a cliff. And to fall off that cliff and, you know, trust that it's going to take us somewhere good takes guts. So
if you want to talk to Hub or ask a question or bother me, it's 826-7771.
Bother you.
We're having a bother me.
Bother you.
Bother me.
You're going to bother you.
826-7771. I have to assume and hope that all you folks know that number, because I am so not good at remembering to say it and just stop apologizing for it. But I have to tack a note on my nose. Okay.
Do we have time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to read 3 paragraphs from Holy Moly. And to set the scenario, I'm in the woods on northeast Kauai, and I'm watching some albatross. I squinted through my telephoto to freeze frame the Moly singles bar seen above me. The birds used more than a dozen dance steps, synchronizing moves like the bow, the stare, and the whinny. There was the head flick, the bill clapper, and the sky snap. The bill under wing posture resembled Kevin Kline's armpit sniff in A Fish Called Wanda. The rapid bill touching looked like Olympic fencing parries, and the mutual moo seemed, frankly, ecstatic. Collectively, the movements appeared to be a creative dance depiction of an entire albatross lifespan, a collage of positions of nest building, food begging, flight takeoffs, walking, napping, and lovemaking. It was all there, their story, a living ritual and a rowdy celebration. With a wingspan as wide as Kobe Bryant is tall, you'd think the birds would be hefty. Not at all. The basketball player's body is about 30 times heavier than theirs. Partly constructed with air sacs, their structure is supported by a skeleton of hollow bones. Imagine an inflated football. Cover it with feathers, white on the torso and dark chocolate on the wings. Then add wide webbed feet. Put on a head with intelligent dark eyes. Add a pinkish bill with a sharp gray tip that can tickle or tear, depending. Add more feathered footballs with their groove on, and you've got yourself a bash. I was so focused on the party, I didn't notice an animal coming up behind me until it was too late. I turned my head, my heart in my throat. There was no need for fear. It was an albatross headed up the hill. Her webs were as supple as goatskin gloves. Her footsteps created an almost inaudible crunch on the ironwood litter, like the sound of your fingertips on your scalp when you run your hand through your hair. "Hey," I whispered gratefully, my anxiety dissipating. The bird gave me no indication she shared either my fright or my relief. In fact, she took notice of me at all, no notice of me at all. Since moli usually nest on uninhabited Hawaiian islands with no native predators, most of them haven't learned to regard humans with any particular alarm. This albatross only had eyes for the boogie on the bluff. She stepped on my foot as she padded past. I was as irrelevant as a root. I'd never received higher praise.
I'm glad that was your choice. I love that part. Mm-hmm. And I've never had the privilege of being able to handle, touch, because not supposed to.
No, not supposed to.
But to know that that's what those feet feel like is fascinating to me. I, for some reason, see them like flippers, like snorkel flippers. That they'd be harder rubber kind of stuff, but they're really not. I want to make sure before we end today that we talk about how does one obtain the book? How do we get this book?
Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge, of course, is reopened now, thankfully, and the bookstore there carries them. There will be other shops on the island that carry them, but it's just out. So I don't know for sure who's even ordered them, but it will be at several shops on Kauai. For those people in Honolulu, there's a really good supply right now at Native Books. And in fact, if you happen to be in Honolulu, there's going to be a book celebration and launch at Native Books at Ward Warehouse on Sunday, June 12th from 2 to 4 p.m. And we're also excited about it. They're ordering prosecco and pupus and live music, and we're going to make them one potty. And then I'll go read a little bit, just like no.
That sounds great. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, but you can also get it.
You can get it. You can order it from Amazon. That's the fastest way if you're not driving around town here and want to go to Kilauea. Amazon Oregon State University Press is who published this, and it's available through them. And on my website, if you want an autograph copy.
Okay, say the website.
So that's albatrosskauai.org.
So again, albatrosskauai.org. .org if you would like an autographed one.
Right.
That would
But if you live on Kauai, you know, we can rendezvous at the outlet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I got to start volunteering there again.
Yeah.
Just bring them. Oh, buy them over there.
Yeah, buy them over there.
Yeah.
Was there a call? Not a pertinent call.
Not a pertinent call.
I can see the folks, just so you know, in the studio, when a phone call comes in, there's a light that turns on. It happens to be red. And so it gets my attention. But since I'm not the one taking the calls, I do have to check with our producer and see if it's somebody.
The one whose fault it is?
The one whose fault it is.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Right.
I catch.
Yeah. That's how it works.
I like.
So if is there a sequel?
Well, first I got to survive this one.
Yes, because you're actually going to take off. You're going to go sell it on the road.
Well, yeah, you know, for this is a thing about, you know, when you write a book, then you get a publisher and it's all very exciting. And, but, you know, you make about $1 a book. And I got to buy them just like everybody else has to buy them. I don't get them for free. So you make about $1 a book. So I got to sell 1 million books to make $1 million, right? Or 1,000 books to make $1,000. So, Yes, the idea is I'm going to be going to several places on the West Coast, and not till the fall. I'm going to do some other things related to staying home first, and then go to some events and bookstores.
A book tour,
yeah.
Go do the speaking tour.
Yeah.
There's a lot to this.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's a lot to it.
It's not... I know that you've been promoting it on Facebook and mm-hmm. your website and so forth, and trying to get good information out. And
right.
It's a story that's good in the telling and worth the telling. And if mm-hmm. it's only about the birds, that's cool.
Yeah.
If it's about something else, that's cool too. Whatever just floats your boat here.
Yeah.
But the concept of having an animal such as this. Decide that this is the safe place, decide that this is home,
yeah.
and providing a story around that
right.
for both the bird and you
mm-hmm. That's right.
is a good read, as they say.
Yeah.
It's a good read. And I'm learning a lot about what it means to write a book, produce a book, and have to organize all of your...
It's a very big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah, the birds need us to give them refuge, and I think even more than that, we need their refuge. We need refuge in them, because we're just losing so much in the world these days. And we need to have some successes. We need to know that we've done good by our sibling creatures mm-hmm. in the world. And so we have an opportunity here to see it directly happen in front of us.
And there is the Kauai Albatross Network. There is an organization that if you want to volunteer, you want to learn more just about the birds, then that's a good way to do it. And I want to thank you, Hob, for coming
in
today and talking about holy moly. Next time you say holy moly, you're going to have to spell it M-O-L-I.
That's right.
It's not the way you learned how to spell it.
Yeah.
Plea mahalo for listening, folks. And we'll be here next month, the second Monday of every month, right here at KKCR. Check us out. And please pay attention to the upcoming fundraising drive. It keeps us all going and keeps the air conditioning on, which is important to me and to those of us in this room, the equipment running. And I want you to please stay tuned for One World Radio with Richard, our favorite DJ. Aloha.
Aloha.
We'll be the same as we started, just traveling along, singing a song.